This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. As negotiators from Canada and Mexico meet with the U.S. this week to begin talks to upgrade the North America Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, many are worried about the lack of transparency in discussions. Just as President Obama's favorite trade deal, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, was shrouded in secrecy, discussions of the NAFTA reboot under Donald Trump are taking place behind closed doors. Free trade agreements have massive impacts on civil society, but governments often leave out public voices. One of the most deeply impacted areas of commerce is food. Farmers and the food they produce in Mexico, the US, and Canada are at the mercy of NAFTA, and now it seems their voices are being left out again. My guest is Josh Wise, Director of Development and Communications at the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. Welcome to the program, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
So how has food and farming been treated under NAFTA currently? This is an agreement that's been in place for more than 20 years. And as I pointed out, farmers have really been at the mercy of NAFTA. How so?
Well, NAFTA has been good for agribusiness profits, but bad for farmers in all three countries. I think the most stark example of how NAFTA has impacted farmers is in Mexico. When NAFTA first went into effect and then coupled with the WTO and the 1996 Farm Bill, what it did is it basically incentivized U.S. producers to produce as much grain as possible for export. What the effect of that was over 2 million Mexican farmers and farm workers being displaced. They lost their land, and many of them ended up in the United States. For farmers in the United States, that same policy basically reinforced the notion that you either have to get big or get out. And so what we've seen is massive farm consolidation, massive agribusiness consolidation, and the further disappearance of family farms.
Now, Donald Trump has, it seems, been on the right side of the issue where trade is concerned. There's very few things that he seems to be on the right side of. But in the issue of trade, he was not just, didn't just come out against the Democratic Party, but many members of his own party criticizing the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, which seems to be, at least for now, dead, and NAFTA. And he, has, of course, spoken mostly in terms of wanting to renegotiate NAFTA in favor of U.S. workers. But what has he said that either gives you pause and cause for concern or makes you hopeful about the NAFTA reboot? Has he said anything that gives you the sense that this could be a good opportunity to rewrite NAFTA in favor of workers and farm workers in particular in all three countries?
Well, to be perfectly honest, nothing Donald Trump said has given confidence at all. It's pretty clear based on his rhetoric and his actions that Donald Trump is a racist and a xenophobe. And for him, trade is not about fair trade. It's not about lifting people up. It's about dominance. And what Donald Trump is concerned with is American dominance. And he may couch that in the rhetoric of having it be good for American workers. But really, this is about winning or losing. And, you know, the trade deficit is basically a score for Trump. And he's just looking to win. That said, we would like to see a NAFTA that, really does put people and the planet first, that incentivizes agroecological or sustainable agriculture production, that puts healthy food above cheap imports and exports. We would love to see the end of the investor-state dispute settlement, which allows corporations to sue sovereign governments. Unfortunately, none of that is included in the negotiating objectives from the Trump administration. They pay some lip service to the investor-state. But, the reality is Trump railed against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but the negotiating objectives that they put out and everything that we've heard coming out of the administration are that they just want to take the TPP and insert it into NAFTA. And that's really disheartening and really unfortunately.
Wow. Well, so it seems as though then the NAFTA reboot, the main issue is as you mentioned, this trade deficit, which basically means that Americans buy more imports from Mexico than the other way around, than Mexicans buy from the U.S. And that trade deficit, which runs into some tens of billions of dollars, is Trump's worldview harms ordinary Americans, and so he wants to even that playing field?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, yes, the trade deficit does matter in aggregate. So we have a deficit with each individual country or a surplus. There are countries we have surpluses with. But the overall effect of the economy the overall effect on the economy is the total trade deficit with the rest of the world. And it, trade deficits absolutely fuel income inequality. They absolutely lead to concentration of wealth with multinational corporations. It's a pretty complex topic. It's a lot more complex than the president is making it out to be. But, you know, simply saying that if we improve the trade balance with Mexico, that's going to be better for American workers is a gross oversimplification of how trade policy actually works.
So just as he said, who knew healthcare could be so complicated, it's possible he's going to say who knew trade negotiations could be so complicated next week, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, and you know, one way to reduce the trade deficit is to reduce trade altogether. And, you know, the position of most civil society organizations is that trade actually can be a good thing. What matters is that it be done fairly. And if we're simply talking about, you know, closing up shop and closing up the borders in order to reduce the trade deficit, well, that's a way of bringing the deficit down in a way that everyone loses. What we really should be concerned with is increasing labor standards, increasing consumer safety standards, increasing environmental protections so that we can have robust trade, but in a way that empowers people and our planet, not the other way around.
Let's talk about the issue of climate. I mean, we talked about U.S.-Mexico you know, issues on NAFTA, but between the U.S. and Canada, the climate is a really big issue. The Canadian government has taken a position on the climate, you know, signing on to the Paris Accord, maybe not going as far enough as environmentalists would like, but certainly compared to the U.S., there's a stark difference. Is climate going to become a sticking point in these NAFTA negotiations, which is, of course, an issue intimately linked to food and food production?
That's correct. And agriculture is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions, conventional agriculture. If you know, sustainable agriculture can actually be done in a way that reduces carbon emissions. But to your point, Mexico and Canada are both signatories to the Paris Agreement. Of course, the U.S. withdrew. Both have stated that they want to include climate provisions in the NAFTA renegotiations. Now, whether or not that's going to be a sticking point, we don't know, because as has been the case with trade negotiations in the past, this is all being done in secret. It's not transparent. And it's going to be really difficult for us to know what's happening behind closed doors, where it's essentially corporate lobbyists writing the laws. So I guess if you're asking whether or not I'm optimistic about climate change being in NAFTA, not really. But, you know, this is just one more example of how U.S. trade policy and global trade policy undermines all of the other international goals that we have, whether it's public health and the World Health Organization or the Paris Climate Agreement. Trade rules being binding as opposed to voluntary, which is what Paris is, mean that if a corporation doesn't like the fact that Canada is implementing a regulation or Mexico's implementing a tariff or whatever to fight climate change, then that corporation can sue in the investor state, you know, tribunals of corporate lawyers. And again, you know, they're not just suing for immediate damages, they're suing for loss of future expected profits. So these are, you know, these are pretty massive cases that, again, are decided in secret by a tribunal of corporate lawyers. So it's, you know, we have yet to see a trade agreement that has been good for climate.
So it seems, Josh, that just as the discussions on the Trans-Pacific Partnership during the Obama administration were shrouded in secrecy, we're seeing the same thing here with NAFTA. All we ever found out about the TPP was through leaked documents, leaked drafts, and none of those were promising. They'd only sort of affirmed why there was secrecy because there was so much sort of injustice built into the drafts themselves. So, with respect to these renegotiations, which have just begun, you're saying that they're trying to stuff the TPP into NAFTA. How so? What are some of the things that were super problematic about the TPP, which was a big reason why people were against it, and ostensibly why Trump also refused it, that we're now going to see revive in NAFTA?
Well, the case that we've often made about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other trade agreements is that it's not just about tariffs and quotas. It's about any law that can be that's part of a country's system of laws can be up for grabs in a trade agreement, and then the trade agreement would supersede the federal or sub-federal lawmaking. So in the case of TPP, we saw lots of banking deregulation. We saw attempts to control internet privacy. For food safety, we saw a diminishing of what are called sanitary and phytosanitary regulations, which basically mean food safety and inspection. And again, the lowering of agricultural tariffs means that it forces farmers into using unsustainable, monocultural, get as big as possible methods of production for export, which fuels climate change, which puts small farmers at a huge disadvantage and leads to the consolidation of farms, and ultimately creates trade volumes that are not going to be good for food safety either. All that was in TPP. We really do expect to see that. At least some of that come back in NAFTA, or at least, major agribusiness groups pushing for it. But like you said, it really is shrouded in secrecy. Even members of Congress, if they want to view the text, have to give up their cell phone, get their pockets checked, go into a room without any aid or any expert who might help them figure out what's going on with the text. And then they're not allowed to take anything with them, and they're not allowed to tell anything. Tell anyone about it. And so if that's the standard for members of Congress, of course the standard for people like us in civil society is much lower. And with NAFTA, this first round at least, there's been no stakeholder input at all. They had a hearing back in June for testimony, but for this round of negotiations, there's been no attempt to engage stakeholders or civil society.
Are corporate lawyers at the table yet?
That, yeah, they are still using the advisory process, which is, to become a cleared advisor, you basically lobby the federal government. And 90% of those folks who are on the have cleared advisor status come from corporations. So yeah,
So
they are
much for
being
draining
monitored
the
right now.
swamp.
That's correct. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the Obama administration used to make big overtures to us saying, well, we are including people from labor and we are including, family farm groups, the environment. But the reality is they stuck them all onto a couple of committees that only dealt with certain issues, when in reality, for family farms, for example, being on the agriculture group is really important. But if you're only on the environmental working group, well, doesn't do you a whole lot of good.
The New York Times had a piece recently saying Canada wants a new NAFTA to include gender and indigenous rights, and sort of a slew of progressive issues to be adopted within any NAFTA rewrite. How likely is it, particularly given the person in our White House, that there will be any headway on these issues?
I'm not optimistic. One of the negotiating objectives that was released by the US was to bring the environment and labor chapters into NAFTA. But what we've seen, through the history of free trade agreements is that even when they do talk about labor and the environment, that the chapters end up becoming unenforceable. So, you know, one thing that's been floated is that citizens should have the same right as corporations, that we should be able to sue governments for, you know, putting in regulations or deregulations that, you know, that destroy our quality of life. Of course, that's never going to happen, especially not under this administration. But the idea that the Trump administration is going to do anything to improve you know, human rights is pretty laughable at this point.
Now, one of the issues, since we are focusing a little bit on food and farming, one of the sticking points in NAFTA and that Trump has also actually shined a light on is the issue of dairy and dairy farming. What are the issues of dairy farming that we need to pay attention to in terms of how the current NAFTA is written? And is there a potential for going in a good direction on dairy within a NAFTA reboot?
Well, again, going in a good direction on anything is going to be a big challenge. But so when NAFTA was originally negotiated, Canada was able to protect its supply management system for dairy, which basically says we're going to limit the amount of supply so that farmers get a fair price for what they're producing. Supply management in general, we think, is a good thing. We would like to see more supply management.
So basically means that you want to not flood the market, because flooding the market with more of the product lowers the prices, and then farmers end up competing for fewer and fewer profits.
Yeah, that's right. And one thing, you know, that's important to point out is that limiting, doing supply management doesn't necessarily raise the consumer price. It might, but what it does is, you know, because the corporations are just taking profits off the top of that. So when there's a bunch of cheap products flooding the market, the price may go down if they really need to dump their goods. But oftentimes what you see is just an increase in the profits for the middlemen. And that's what we've seen with a whole number of products in agribusiness, where farmers are losing out, but agribusiness profits are rising due to low prices that the farmers are receiving, but not necessarily low prices that consumers are paying. And that's true across the board in trade policy, is that the whole thing is really designed to boost corporate profits, not to benefit producers or consumers. So, you know, the U.S. really wants to crack into Canada's dairy market. Canada, at this point, seems to be standing pretty strong in favor of not letting them do that. And we'd like to see that. You know, we just put out a statement along with a number of other family farming groups, and family farmers in general are in favor of the supply management system. Because we know that it's fair prices, not increased exports, that's going to be good for farmers.
Well, Josh, as these negotiations proceed, maybe we will start to see leaked documents like we did with the TPP, and then determine what it is that's happening behind closed doors. In the meantime, where can people find out more about the work that your organization does if they're concerned about NAFTA?
Well, iatp.org is our website. We've just put together a collection of 25 years worth of research and analysis on NAFTA in a NAFTA portal. And so I would encourage folks to go look at kind of the history of the first NAFTA negotiation, and then what we can do as NAFTA renegotiations continue, again, with a focus on food and agriculture. We also just put out a paper, sort of a NAFTA 101 paper on what to expect for food and agriculture in the renegotiation. And we'll be doing a lot more of follow-up around that.
Well, Josh, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck to you.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
My guest is Josh Wise, Director of Development and Communications at the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy, and we've been discussing secrecy in NAFTA renegotiations. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.